the General Motors Welcome Back Party, it's going to be a more modest affair.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. It looks like when GM returns to the stock market this fall, it won't be as big a sale as first thought. Here's Marketplace's Elisa Roth joining us live from our New York bureau. Good morning, Elisa.
Good morning.
What do we know about GM's initial public offering, and what is just speculation?
Well, it's probably safe to say that the IPO, the initial public offering, will happen before the end of the year. But we're starting to hear that it could be valued at as little as $8 to $10 billion, which is about half the original figures. It's tricky. The government wants to recoup as much money as possible, but it's also worried about selling shares in a dodgy market. And what we're hearing is that the Treasury Department at this point is more interested in getting the highest price per share rather than selling the most shares possible. GM also wants to make money, and it also needs to make the point that it's doing all right.
You know, Elisa, it seems like not since Google went public have we heard this much speculation about an IPO. What's so special about GM?
It's a couple of things. First of all, taxpayers do own a majority stake in GM, so there's a certain sense of ownership and are we going to get our money back? In a similar vein, the GM bailout has become representative of what some people think went wrong with the bailout, so everybody's watching it for that. And it's also a role model, in a way, for future IPOs of companies the government has a stake in, like Chrysler and AIG.
Marketplace's Elisa Roth, live in New York. Thanks, Elisa.
You're welcome.
Congress is looking at using the tax code to keep companies from moving factories and jobs overseas. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports Democrats hope that idea appeals to voters concerned about unemployment.
The bill takes a carrot and stick approach. The carrot, giving companies a 2-year break from Social Security taxes for every U.S. employee they hire to replace a foreign worker. The stick, firms could no longer deduct the cost of relocating abroad, and companies couldn't put off paying taxes on foreign income. Would all that be enough to keep U.S. factories open? Economist Gus Fauché at Moody's Analytics is skeptical. He says foreign employees make up to 90% less than U.S. workers.
Those cost differentials are so large that any changes that they make through the tax code are going to be pretty minimal, and they really aren't going to be enough to sway business decisions.
And some big U.S. companies have moved their headquarters abroad, so they're not even subject to U.S. tax law. Catherine Mann is an economist at Brandeis University.
You know, Accenture, for example, is headquartered in Bermuda, and Halliburton, of course, in Dubai.
Mann says they're far from the reach of any tax legislation Congress can cook up. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Let's do the Friday numbers. Well, world stocks are generally lower this morning. Some of that might be a reaction to the rise in new unemployment claims in the U.S. because what we call our fellow Americans, other countries call customers. The Dow Industrials fell as well yesterday, dropping 76 points, about 0.75%. The close was 10,662.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constant Contact Email Marketing, providing small businesses and nonprofits with personal coaches to help them succeed. ConstantContact.com. By the new Rosetta Stone, introducing their latest advancement in language learning, version 4 Totali. Information at rosettastone.com/APM. And by MassMutual, offering retirement and 401k plans to businesses for more than 60 years. MassMutual.com/retirestrong.
You know, we just did the numbers earlier, and when we do that, we mention the stock markets. We do not often give the price of commodities like cotton. But as Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports, cotton closed above $1 a pound this week, and that's its highest price in 15 years.
Cotton prices are up not because of anything happening here in the U.S., but because of bad weather in two of the largest cotton-producing countries, China and Pakistan.
When I get up in the morning, the first thing I do is look at Indian weather, China weather, then I look at U.S. weather.
Sharon Johnson is a cotton analyst with First Capital Group in Atlanta. She says back in November of 2008,
prices got below 40 cents as the worst of the recession hit, and here we are less than 2 years, and we've nearly tripled in price.
She says we're also seeing some of the highest demand ever for cotton, mostly from fast-growing developing countries. She calls it a cotton bubble that could soon burst, leaving farmers wondering what to plant.
A lot of producers may find it difficult to handle these kind of price swings and may be able to maintain a position.
One of them is Tim Lucky, a fourth-generation cotton farmer in Milan, Tennessee.
When my father was farming, the price of corn or cotton didn't fluctuate 4 or 5 cents a year. Now, cotton will fluctuate 3 cents a day.
Some blame speculators for the quick rise in price. Jeffrey Christian is managing director of the commodity research firm CPM Group. He says big investors have thrown a lot of money into cotton in recent years.
That's relatively easier in gold, but when you start getting into smaller markets like cotton or coffee or cocoa, it takes very little shift in investment money into these markets to drive the price sharply higher.
What does all this mean for consumers? Well, that $10 T-shirt may soon cost $12.
In the T-shirts and the underwear and the lower-cost cotton garments, I believe you're already seeing the impact of higher cotton prices.
Perhaps it's time for polyester to make a comeback. Sharon Johnson says her husband might still have his old leisure suit in the back of his closet.
We might have to have it refitted just a bit.
I say go for it. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Yes, life going nowhere. And finally, the whole week's business news now in a Marketplace Minute. The people who have the profession of declaring we're out of recession waited more than a year to sound the all clear. Tinker's dam, is that the expression? Blockbuster's finally going bust. After years of eating Netflix dust, they acknowledge their business model was wrong. Let's charge them a late fee for waiting so long. The FDA has begun to examine the worth of genetically modified salmon. Is it a cynical industry scam and a threat or a way to alleviate famine? And Colin Powell says, let's not grouse about illegal workers. They fix my house. I mean, houses of people other than me. That story is at marketplace.org. This is the Marketplace Morning Report in Los Angeles. Tweeting at Bill Radke Radio and sitting now in a chair, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college accountant? How does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox, and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.